Hi there, and welcome to the Business of Southern Sports, or as we call it, The Boss. I'm Roger Maness. Our guest today will be Chip Carey, the longtime television play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Braves. But before we get to that great conversation with Chip, first and foremost, I simply want to say thanks for checking us out. You might imagine with a name like The Boss or The Business of Southern Sports, we've kind of given ourselves a lot of leeway there to cover a lot of different topics depending upon who the guest is. We literally can talk about the front office or the field of play because it's all business, right? Pitching matchups, what play gets called on third down and eight in football, things like that, it's business. But so are dollars and deals and draft picks, advertising, broadcasting, etc. So today, of course, our guest will be Chip. We'll talk broadcasting with Chip, his career background, how he got to where he is, his love of baseball. We'll, of course, talk about the Braves roster, life through the pandemic. But we'll also touch on his relationship with his father, Skip Carey, and his grandfather, Harry Carey. Now, the ball got rolling for us a little bit because of our friend over at The Athletic, Jeff Schultz, recently did a column on Chip and touched on many of those same themes. So I would encourage you to go read that column if you are a subscriber to The Athletic. If not, check it out. It's a great column and lets you know a little bit more about Chip. But in this podcast form, obviously, we can go in much greater detail because it's a long conversation. If you like what you hear, I would ask that you please subscribe and share. We're a relatively new podcast. We've got a lot of great guests that have already been on and more coming down the pipeline. So please subscribe and share. Follow us on social media. We have a Facebook page at The Boss Podcast, Business of Southern Sports. We're also on Instagram at The Boss Podcast. On Twitter, we'll use my personal handle, which is at R-O-G-E-R-M-A-N-I-S. That is at Roger Maness. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, Dirty Girl Mixers, Get Your Mix Fix, and Rec Tech Grills, Live the Rec Tech Lifestyle. All right, without any further ado, it's time for the show. Let's go. To get us kicked off, it's our fictional house band, Herschel and the Heismans.
Broadcasting from our studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for the Business of Southern Sports, or as we like to call it, The Boss. The Boss is presented by Dirty Girl Mixers, Get Your Mix Fix, and by Rec Tech Grills. Join the Rec Tech lifestyle. Now, here is the host of The Boss, Roger Maness.
Welcome to the show. We're excited to have Chip Carey as our guest today. Of course, Chip is the longtime television voice of the Atlanta Braves. Chip, how are you doing? You're coming to us from your home in Florida via Zoom.
It's beautiful down here in St. Augustine where I live. Roger, great to be with you again. It's been too long. We're all excited, trying to not go stir crazy with quarantine. I've got a fourth grader homeschooling. I've got two college sophomores back home. I've got a daughter graduating in San Diego next week. And we're all hoping that baseball is going to be back real soon. So as they say, live in interesting times. I think we're certainly doing that.
Well, your children run the gamut. So your daughter that's graduating, I'm assuming no walking, no graduation walk, the
correct
sacrifices everybody's making. But on the flip side of that, you said you had a fourth grader. Are you having to bone up on your elementary school social studies and things like that?
Very much so. I was very happy and pleased with my grade today. We had a reading comprehension test, and I helped them get a 63. So that's better than most of my grades when I was in fourth grade. But, you know, it's actually, Roger, been a bonus for all of us in a lot of different ways. Those of us who work in baseball this time of year, we're traveling. We're on the six-month marathon run, and we don't get these days with friends and family back home, especially this time of year. So while it's been a painful thing economically and socially for all of us, it's really been a wonderful chance to sort of connect and look at the small blessings that is, you know, we get to spend time as a family and do things that ordinarily we wouldn't. And that's the way we're trying to keep it.
And everybody healthy, happy, just dealing with it.
Well, healthy, yes. Happy, I don't know. I think my wife's ready for me to get out of the house and start doing games again. But yeah, look, we all know that there's a much bigger picture. Those of us in baseball, and we understand that. We're all encouraged by the things that are happening and the talks that are going on and that people are starting to beat this, and we're on the downward side of it in a lot of places with a lot of work to go, obviously. But we're hanging in there and just trying to stay as positive as we possibly can and be as socially responsible as we can, but continue on with the business of living.
Yeah, it is interesting that as we take this here in the middle of May, there's some movement. And just 6 weeks ago, there was no movement. The world was just shut down from a sports perspective. So at least there seems to be turning a corner of how can we get back on the field of play. So that should give us some optimism about trying to get something back on the field. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I agree totally. Look, I was a former Cubs announcer, and what we had to do many a year there was sell hope. And without hope that we're going to play, I think a lot of people would be jumping off buildings. Because, look, it's we understand that, again, in the grand scheme of things, baseball is not important. No sport is. But in the, you know, microcosmic world, look, we think baseball has a chance to build, really be a pathfinder here and a trailblazer in showing people how we can come out of this responsibly and as safely as possible and give people a sense that, you know what, America's back. And the initial plans that we're hearing is starting up around July 1st or so. I can't think of anything more American than maybe having opening day on the 4th of July with all the flags and the banners, and maybe people won't be there, but they'll be watching, and maybe that'll give people a semblance of, you know what, we're getting back. We're starting to come back. We're opening up, and we're beating this thing, and I think that would do an awful lot for, you know, people's hearts and minds, and I think that's just as important as, you know, for people like me, just the thrill of being able to go back and work and do what we love and be around the people we care about very much.
What kind of feedback are you getting about how important baseball is to community, to getting back to normal?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, look, we're all rallying around our first responders and our healthcare workers and people like that, and the people that have continued to work and have been able to work to keep the country functioning right now. But I think that, you know, what sports provides, Roger, as you know, is a diversion. You know, there are so many things that are always reported that are bad in the world. Sports is an escape. It's something for a community to rally around. And I think it's going to be very important for New York, with all that they've gone through, for Chicago, for Atlanta, for Miami, for all of these cities that have seen huge economic shutdowns, huge losses of life, lots of people hospitalized, to escape that for a little while. And if we in the business and we in the sport can provide even a small glimmer of that, I think it would be a wonderful thing. You know, there's nothing better than when you've had a rough day at work, and you know this, you've had a rough day at work, you come home, you have a nice meal, you have a, you know, your beverage of choice, you sit down, you put the ball game on, and you just forget about things for a while. And you revel in what Ronald Acuna Jr. and Freddie Freeman and Mike Soroka do. And you hear the announcer say something funny or something that makes you mad. It just takes your mind off of all the awfulness in the world and lets you think about something that's supposed to be fun and entertaining, and that's what we hope to provide.
So when the announcer says something to make me mad, is that always you? No, I'm teasing.
Pretty much.
You know, I'm joking.
But I know, of course, but that's part of the deal, and it's okay. But, you know, I really believe that we can all play a very small part in helping people feel better and getting back to whatever normal is going to be. And from what I'm hearing, you know, there won't be fans in the stands, but they're going to be watching, and restaurants are going to be open, and there'll be people at the Battery at Truist Park when games are played there. And I think that's going to do a whole lot of good for the psyche of our country and certainly for the psyche of Braves country to see baseball back again and see their favorite team hopefully defending a division championship and playing in what's going to be a very interesting postseason competition should they get there.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think the country experienced its shell shock, for lack of a better term, when sports shut down like that. And it was like,
very much so.
Okay, we realize that this is bigger than we might have thought.
Very much so.
Back to your situation, you mentioned, you know, everybody self-quarantining and your family and everybody gets on each other's nerves from time to time. That's just life at home. But you literally, because you're, you know, part of the crew, you live the calendar of a ball player. I mean, you travel, mm-hmm. You're part of the team.
Correct.
So you are at home more now. You know, other people deal with people coming home and going to work every day. So they see them every day. But your life has just literally been turned upside down from a calendar perspective and from being with your family. What has that adjustment been like for you? I'm sure you are stir crazy beyond everybody's being stir crazy because you're used to being on the road so much.
Very much so. The hardest part of our job is the exit when the season starts and then the reentry when you come back. Because, look, my wife, Susan, is one of the strongest and most independent and smartest people I know. And she's very capably and ably taken on the role of mother and father for 6 months a year for the entire lives of our children. And that's the deal that we, you know, the deal with the devil, if you will, that we made. You know, the old saying, I now interrupt this marriage for baseball season. And that's pretty much how it works. And the one thing that's always been humbling for me is knowing how well she can handle it. And then in the interim, realizing just how unnecessary we can be when we come back, because they get their routine. They get the way they get going and make sure the house is clean. The bills are paid the way that they do it. And then we come home after being gone for 6 months and screw the whole thing up. And it takes a long time to adjust to that. Not to mention the interpersonal relationships that are put on hold, not just your family, but your friends, what you do in your community. All of that stuff is very, very tough. So, you know, again, We are fortunate enough to have a first-class lifestyle. We're treated like kings for the most part, but it's still a bed in a box when you travel to even the nicest of hotels. And how many times can you go to Pittsburgh and New York without it getting monotonous? But having said that, what this has taught me is, A, I love my family. It's been wonderful being around, and I've worked very hard to have a nice place to live and live in a great community. Two, I really, really miss baseball. Number three, I really miss working with my second family, which is my coworkers. I miss interacting with them and the fans. I miss baseball. And most importantly, I realize I don't want to retire anytime soon because I'm not a golfer, at least not very much. How many tomatoes can you pick and how many yards can you cut? I want to talk about baseball and get out and do the ball game and then sit back and relax and tee it up again in 2021. And hopefully that's the path that we're all going to be on here in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, people a lot smarter than me are trying to figure that out and get them back on the field. Yeah. And I can't wait, even if it does mean no fans. And months ago, I would not have even considered that. But just to get the sport back on the field. What is your situation even different with your family based in Florida? So even when you are in Atlanta calling games for those 80-plus home games per year, are you still separated from your family?
Yeah, pretty much, because, again, my youngest son is still in school. My older sons are at Georgia, so I get to see them quite a bit during the summer. My wife and son will come up and visit me when we have a long homestand in Atlanta. But, again, I just live in a small one-bedroom apartment near the ballpark and rent that during the season and then come back home. So, my wife has, friends and family, and her parents are here, and she does, such great work. In the community, she has a business of her own and interests in things that go far beyond baseball. And for her to be pent up in Atlanta while I'm gone for half of a six-month season doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So that's pretty much the way that we as a family have done it. Lots of families do it that way. Her parents are very much involved in my children's upbringings. They live down the street from us here in St. Augustine. So she has a great support system. She has family here. My older sons get back here from time to time. My daughter occasionally comes back. So I go off and do the baseball games. And even when I'm home, I'm preparing and getting ready for a game, so I'm not really present anyway. And I think it just, for our family's sake, that's what's made the most sense, and it's worked out very well. And my wife and I have been married now 24 years and 25 next year. So for whatever reason, this crazy, in-and-out relationship of baseball and being home has served our family very well, and I hope it will continue.
Well, congratulations. I was going to say you've been married 25 years, but it's really only been about 12 in real face-to-face time.
Exactly. Yeah, next year's silver anniversary. I'll try to cut that in half and see if I can get away with it.
Yeah, I doubt it. One of the things, I want to give a shout-out to our friend Jeff Schultz over at The Athletic, who recently did a column on you, and you shared a story with him I wish you would share here, and perhaps because this is audio might give us a taste of it. You mentioned a character you have created that kind of gets on your family's nerves a little bit, your alter play-by-play ego, Biff Barf.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of them. There's Biff Barf and his partner, Duke Puke. It's when I talk in a broadcaster voice just like this, Roger Maytis from his Atlanta studios, talking all things sports around the country, around the world. Tune him in on the, what's the name of your podcast, Roger?
The Boss Podcast.
Gentlemen, the Boss Sportscast or the Boss Podcast, whatever. So, yeah, I do that every now and then with my little son and my older sons, too. And it makes them want to just, makes their skin want to crawl. But, it's just a way of having fun and doing goofy stuff. When the pandemic started, we'd be doing, as Jeff's article indicated, play-by-play of my out in the front yard or my kids playing wiffle ball or my wife bringing in the groceries. It's just a way to sort of release some tension and have a little fun. Believe me, I have to do it in very, very small doses. Otherwise, they'd kick me out of the house.
So when you miss baseball so much, you've created an alter ego play-by-play that gets on your family's nerves. Maybe we need to get the game back going again.
Yeah, well, I think that would be the best course of action for all concerned. There's no doubt.
Well, with you on the road, with today's technology, I'm assuming you're able to at least FaceTime or video conference so you can see them.
Yeah, all that stuff. I mean, we do that a little bit. But again, schedules are so hard. When I'm ready to have a chance to FaceTime, I'm usually in the middle of my day before noon and my son's in school, so I don't see him. And by the time he gets home from school, I'm on my way to the ballpark and doing all my pregame preparation, meeting with the managers. And so usually when you're in a major league broadcasting broadcast area, you'll see all the broadcasters and all the writers standing right behind their workstations, all furiously talking on the cell phones, because that's their 15 minutes where they have a chance after dinner and before the game for us and for our families to connect and say hello. And obviously when the game ends at 11 o'clock at night, it's too late to call because everybody's asleep. So there really is a wonderful opportunity with technology to stay closer and stay in touch. But from a convenience standpoint, it's all like we've said so many times, we're slaves to the schedule, and it's not just ours, it's theirs. And you have to be respectful of that.
Now, you were born into a broadcasting family, obviously. Harry Carey, legendary, was your grandfather. Skip Carey, legendary, was your father. But yet you grew up in St. Louis, and you didn't have the closest relationships with either of them growing up. Can you just touch on that a little bit and how hard it was to kind of forge bonds with them?
Yeah, it was. My parents divorced when I was 5 years old. I remember my dad backing out of the driveway in his green Mercury Cougar. And my parents were divorcing, and I asked my mom, where's dad going? And she said, he's going on a long road trip. That's how it was explained to me, that they weren't going to be together anymore. And that became our new normal. I lived with my mom in Atlanta, and then we moved back to St. Louis because my dad was starting his career with the Atlanta Hawks and was getting ready to move along to the Braves. That was in 1976. I had very little, if any, interaction with my grandfather. He was in Chicago. I was in St. Louis, and I never saw him. And that was hard. I mean, like most kids in the Midwest, cable TV started entering our part of the country in the early 1980s. We got cable in our house in 1982. And like any crazy baseball fan, I'd rush home from school to catch the Cubs on WGN, and that game would end, and I'd rush off to baseball practice and homework. And then I would tune in the Braves game. Most of the time they're on the West Coast playing the Dodgers or the Padres, and I'd see that game before I fell asleep. That's also including listening to the Cardinals games on radio. But I didn't spend a lot of time with them. I got 2 weeks of visitation in the summer with my dad, and he'd come to St. Louis for two series with the Braves and Cardinals, and that's pretty much the extent of how much we saw each other. It wasn't that he loved me, but he was working hard to support his new family and support me and my sister and my mom, and he did all of those things exceptionally well. But obviously, the perception of me sitting alongside my dad every day from the time I was 4 years old and having Thanksgiving dinner with Harry Carey is just simply not true, because it just didn't happen. I wish it had, though.
And there's an uncomfortable story to read about in the Jeff Schultz column about you were in high school playing baseball and you somebody introduced you to Harry. And Harry,
yeah, I was a kid. Well, Harry's third wife is Dutchie. She's still alive. Wonderful lady who taught him about being a husband and father and a grandfather, and is still a wonderful lady, and we love her dearly. Her youngest son was a couple of years older than I, and he was playing baseball at the same complex I was playing in suburban St. Louis. My game had finished earlier. He was still playing, and I was taking my spikes off and putting my stuff in my bag, and one of my friends came over and said, "Hey, your grandpa's here." And I said, "Who?" He said, "Harry Carey." I said, "Really?" I said, "Cool." So I walked over, and he was sitting behind home plate, waited till the half inning ended, walked over and waved to him. And I was the biggest kid on the team, and I looked an awful lot like him at the time. And he looked at me like, "Who are you?" Had no idea who I was. Well, I walked away, obviously hurt by that, and was off in the corner. And one of my coaches said, "What's wrong with you?" And I told him the story, and he said, "Come on, grab me." So we walked back, waited for another half inning to go, and he walked over and said, "Hi, Mr. Carey. I'm Bob Peplaw with the Manchester Athletic Association. We've got this young man who's a really good ball player, and I think he's someone you ought to meet." And Harry stuck out his hand garrulously, and life of the party. "Hey, young man, what's your name?" And before I could answer, my coach said, "He's your grandson, Chip." And you could have heard a pin drop. That's exactly how Jeff wrote it. It was silence, and all the heads turned toward Harry, who didn't know what to say, and I just said, "Nice to see you again," and I walked away. Well, he followed me, gave me the handshake and a hug, and asked how I was doing and all of that. But that sort of encapsulated the relationship until I got into the business. He knew of me, but he didn't know me. And from that moment on, I made a vow to myself that if I was fortunate enough to have my own family, I wasn't going to be a perfect parent. I probably wasn't going to be a perfect husband, but for sure my kids were going to know me, and my grandchildren sure would as well. And the lesson that I learned from that was, your role models and your idols and your family members can give you a wonderful roadmap as to how to be. They can also teach you what not to be. And that was an important and sad lesson that I still remember and still think about.
Well, that's a horribly uncomfortable story to hear. But
yeah, it's true.
But you've also spun the positive out of it, which is fantastic. And it does break the perception that most baseball fans have that there's just this dynastic broadcasting family named the Careys, and they were all getting together to watch baseball together. And that really didn't happen until you got in the booth with them, I guess, sometime in the early 90s, the three of you shared a booth.
Doing baseball. I was doing basketball in 89. I was 24 years old, and they had my dad and my grandfather down to, you know, do a game and, you know, come down for a few minutes during an NBA game, which was a trip and a lot of fun. But you're right. I mean, the dynastic part of it and all that stuff. Look, for whatever reason, the good Lord gave me a gift. They gave the same gift to my dad, and they gave the same gift to my grandfather. And I hope they'll give it to my two sons who also want to get into the business. But, you know, I've done a lot of hard work on my own. I've gotten a ton of help. Yes, the last name has helped. But as you know, Roger, you get doors open for you. It's up to you to walk through them and not have them slam shut in your face. And I'm very proud of the fact that whatever advantages I have gained by my last name, I've also been able to overcome the obstacles that presented. Because when I got to Chicago and tried to follow Harry, it was not an easy transition. There was a lot of expectation for following a guy that was in the Hall of Fame, was a beloved grandfatherly figure in a huge city and following a huge franchise, that I had to struggle to find my own voice. And that was the greatest lesson they gave me, was you have to be yourself. And I never tried to be a cheap imitation of my dad or my grandfather. I am who I am, warts and all, as we've discussed here. I'm an open book. I'll answer any question as honestly as I can. And I have nothing to hide about that. But I am my own person, and I've worked hard to create my own persona and my own way of doing things, my last name be damned, but I'm also grateful for it and know that I have a great tradition to try to uphold and pass along, but I'm also smart enough to understand I'm standing on the shoulders of giants. This isn't something I've done on my own, and I'm grateful for them.
And what's interesting to me, Chip, is the three of you have very distinct, separate styles. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, Harry was kind of the grandfatherly figure, the life of the party. I'm having a beer with you while you watch the game type guy. Skip was professionally polished, but always witty. There was this subtext mm-hmm. of the sarcastic comment here and there, just the quick little one-liner. How would you describe your style?
Well, I mean, that's really for other people to say. I hope that what people take out of my broadcast, he's a nice guy who's having a good time talking about baseball. That's it. I can be as sarcastic and sardonic and crazy and goofy and silly as the other two. But I think the era in which we work now, Roger, makes that a very, very dicey proposition. I think it's harder now to be a broadcaster than it ever was, what with Facebook and Twitter and all the immediate critiques of your work for good or for bad. People aren't allowed really to grow into their own skin. They're expected to be perfect right out of the chute. And that's really, really hard, especially for guys coming out of college. They're trying to get their feet wet. My style, like I said, hopefully every man has a good time, sets up his partner, enjoys the game, wants to learn about the game, and is knowledgeable and excited and a fan. I mean, I am a fan of the team. I want the Braves to win every game they play. Unfortunately, as you know, you lose 60 games a year at least. And sometimes your product on that day is not as good as it was hoped. And it's our job to explain why and to try to couch it in a way that makes it fair and entertaining. And we do that pretty well, I think. So it's up for everybody else to describe what my style is. But I can promise you it's me, warts and all. And that's the way that I'm going to keep doing it as long as I'm fortunate enough to be able to do so.
That's a little bit about your background. You said you played a little baseball growing up. I assume your career ended in high school, like everybody else.
Before that, right.
Sadly. In about fifth grade, I could not hit a curveball, so that was
It was right around that time for me. I think it was seventh for me, yeah.
High school in St. Louis, then off to the University of Georgia. You do some play-by-play in college radio there. That's actually where you and I met way back when,
many
years ago. Out of college, you tried to do the local TV thing, as I recall, to be the anchorman on the sports desk, and you did that in a couple of markets, correct?
Yes, I started in Panama City. I think three or four of us got jobs out of college. I was lucky enough to have one of them and went to Panama City Beach. And it wasn't just sports. We did news. We did weather. We did photography. We edited our own stuff. I mean, people think, wow, you have such a glamorous job. Well, when you start, any job is glamorous. But my first gig out of college was at WMBB in Panama City. I did all of those things that I mentioned. I made the princely sum of $10,000 a year. Lived on a friend's couch on the beach in Panama City, and went from there to Greensboro, North Carolina. So overnight, I went from market 117 or 119 to 50. And that was an eye-opener because it was a real big jump to big-time college, ACC basketball and football. We were close enough to Charlotte that we could do the Charlotte Knights games. We could get Charlotte Hornets highlights for a time or two. NASCAR was big. So it really opened my eyes and opened my world to a very, very big, broad spectrum of sports and sports personalities. And it really helped me hone my craft as a writer, as a producer, and as an interviewer. And I love my time in Greensboro. It's a beautiful part of the country, and I learned a lot.
I don't know if you know this or not or remember this. Our junior year, I interned at WMBB.
So the
news director was Larche Hardy. So I was only down there for a few months and then came back to school.
Larche was there. John Williams was the news director, and his edict was WMBB at the time was the third highest rated station in that market. There were two stations in Panama City, one on the beach, one downtown, and the other one was in Dothan, Alabama. And the Dothan, Alabama station got better ratings than ours did. So John Williams came in from Dothan and had an edict that we're going to wear coats and ties everywhere we go while we're on the air. Well, when you're in college and you come out of school and you're lugging 3/4-inch tape decks and tripods and those heavy cameras and the batteries on the beach and you're in a tie and all the girls are running around in bikinis, that wasn't the greatest look. And it got old real quick. So I was happy to get to a cooler climate in North Carolina after that 6-month stint.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned that you were making 10 grand a year or whatever. On a recent podcast I did with Reese Davis from ESPN, I've known Reese for 30 plus years as well. I often joke that I've known Reese Davis since he was making $10,000 a year, and he's not making that anymore.
No, he's not. That's more like a minute.
So you're the second person I could say now. I've known Chip since he was making $10,000 a year, and he's not making that anymore.
That's exactly right.
So okay, let's talk ball. We're not playing baseball right now. Did you have any favorite players growing up? I guess in St. Louis, your favorite players weren't Braves. Who did you have on your pedestal while the rest of us were looking at Hank Aaron and Dale Murphy and Phil Negro?
Ted Simmons. He was my favorite player. Switch hitting catcher, got to the Hall of Fame this year. Remarkable player, tough, smart, maybe the smartest guy I've ever met in baseball other than Steve Stone. Just a grinder, a great guy. He now works for the Braves. And I have had a handful of conversations with him that are just so eye-opening and so, lightning bolt moment type conversations. When I was a kid, I had the long hair. I was a catcher. I was the fattest kid on the team, so they stuck me behind the plate. But Ted Simmons was the guy that I idolized for the Cardinals and actually got to go to a catching clinic one time, and he was there with Jack Buck, and they called me in to, to be a – his dummy to here's how you position yourself, all that stuff. Never forget that moment. But for the Braves, Dale Murphy, Jeff Blauser, Jerry Royster, Phil Negro, Gary Matthews, all those guys were incredibly influential and nice people when I got to be a bat boy as a kid when I visited my dad. And that's the really cool thing about both franchises is that you can be a fan of them and all those guys are still around and they're Hall of Fame people as much as they were Hall of Fame players. And that's certainly the case with the Braves, Roger. We're so blessed with so many remarkable personalities that had great careers and are even better people. And they come around. The Braves have done a great job with their alumni program to bring those guys back and put them on the air and have them meet and greet the fans, which is so, so important. And so for me, as a Cardinal fan, Ted Simmons, I mentioned all those Braves guys. We're really, really lucky to have such a pantheon of super people to idolize and talk to.
Well, that is so interesting, that you were a bat boy and now you're the play-by-play guy. The story arc there is, that's a cool journey.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, Bill Akery was the equipment manager at the time. And, again, with my visitation with my dad, all I wanted to do was come to the ballpark and be with him. And obviously I couldn't be in the booth with him 24/7. So he said to Bill, look, can I give you $200? I'm going to pay him, put him in a uniform. Can he be a bat boy? And Bill said, sure, whatever. So I came down, I'd get my uniform. I'd hang around the locker room. I'd be under the stadium during batting practice, hitting balls into the cage. And at the old Fulton County Stadium, they didn't even have a batting cage. They had a net and dirt floor under the stands, and the players would go warm up in there. As opposed to the luxurious conditions that players have now. But watching guys like Bill Naharadny and Biff Pokoroba and Phil Negro and Rick Behenna and Craig McMurtry, all names that real hardcore Braves fans will remember. But just to be in that locker room and all that stuff was going on was such an unbelievable thrill because all of us who love baseball dreamed of being a player. And I knew very quickly I wasn't going to be good enough. But it allowed me a chance to ride to the ballpark with my dad, put on the uniform, do my little chores, whatever, and then go home and ride home with my dad after the game. And it was just a way for us to start to bond and connect. And he would get reports from Bill Akrey about, well, is he doing a good job? And he'd tell all the players, hey, be nice. That's my kid. I got to go on one road trip with my dad to Houston one time, and he was hanging out in the bar after the game. He got me a roll of quarters, and I was playing Space Invaders, and Al Hrabowski came over with a roll of quarters himself. And we played Space Invaders for like 45 minutes to an hour while my dad hung out with his buddies and recapped the game. And ironically enough, I got to do some games with Al Hrabowski with the Cardinals years ago, and we've become friends. So it is a great fraternity, and no matter where you start in the game, if you have a little piece of it, you never want to let it go. And for me, my start as a major league guy was as a bat boy with the Braves back in like 1976 and 77 when the Braves weren't very good.
Al Hrabowski, for those who don't remember, I believe was the Mad Hungarian. He would step behind the mound to self psych himself up and then turn around and look down the batter with a vengeance. Oh, the good times. Childhood memories. Childhood memories. So now you spend your adult life calling baseball. And so there was a time when you were the same age as all the players. Now you're older than all the players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. a lot older.
Isn't funny how time works that way? But this team is this Braves team, so young, so dynamic, so many stars. We're not on the field, but if we could get on the field, this is a team with a chance, is it not?
Very much so. I think the work that Alex Anthopoulos did in the offseason is going to bear fruit. No one could have envisioned a season like the one we hope to have, but if that's the case, a very good starting pitching rotation, an excellent and deep and dynamic bullpen is going to be key. Will Smith is a huge addition. You could make a case, Roger, that the Braves have six guys, maybe seven guys that could close if they need to. You're going to need organizational pitching depth, which Atlanta is going to have with Kyle Wright and Bryce Wilson and others. Sean Newcomb is going to fight for a spot. He'll be in that mix. So with Felix Hernandez, Cole Hamels ought to be ready to go. Soroka and Fried and Foltynewicz. So you get my point. Braves are going to have a stacked pitching rotation. How third base shakes out is going to be interesting to see with Josh Donaldson now a Minnesota Twin. But if we have a designated hitter, you could have Marcell Ozuna DH. You could have Riley play left. You could have Camargo play third. If you've got a real tough right-hander out there, you could have Nick Markakis DH if you want. So they've put together, Roger, a very flexible, very dynamic, very interchangeable 25 or 30-man roster, whatever it turns out to be. And the importance of that is quite obvious. We're not going to have minor league baseball as we know it. These kids are going to have to stay ready and loose on backfields and be ready when called upon. The team that gets off to the best start and can withstand those injuries and manage their staffs, their pitching staffs, that is the best, is going to have a huge leg up as far as getting to one of those seven postseason slots in each league, as it were.
Yeah, it's not just, you touched on this, it's not just about getting the games back on the field in an abbreviated schedule or a half schedule or whatever. Strategy changes because so many new things are going to be implemented, at least we anticipate. You may have more double headers. You're talking about a DH in both leagues now.
Mm-hmm. I'm for anything and everything. At this point, my own personal opinion is that this is not the year to get on your high horse about I'm a traditionalist and there should be no DH and we need the strap, but forget that. I've used this analogy a couple of times. If ever there was a season where baseball could be a petri dish for what they want the game to look like in 3 years, this is it. Let's try the DH. Let's try putting runners at second base in extra innings. Let's try seven-inning doubleheaders. Let's try games without replay again. Do we really need it? I mean, everything should be on the table as far as trying it. Everything from the players and owners' perspective should be let's work on this together and let's really take a poll. What do you guys like? What do you think is good for the game? And come to an agreement with regards to that, because no matter what happens, 2020 is going to be an aberration, we hope. I would assume that we're going to have a full regular 2021 season, but this is the time to throw all that stuff out the window and just get the games in. I hope that they can find a way to play more than 82 games. I'm with you. There should be and probably will be a lot of doubleheaders just to get games in because the TV money is so high, and the more games that are played, the players get more money and the owners get more money. That's the name of the game here. And as long as we can do that safely and as long as we can protect and grow the game in a different, unique way, I think fans are going to be intrigued by that. And I hope that baseball recognizes that they have a once-in-a-generational opportunity to pivot and position this game to once again be the national pastime by the way it's presented in a way that's never been thought of before. And I think, as you said, much bigger brains than ours are already thinking about that, and they'll find ways to implement that when we get started.
Well, and I'm troubled, and I hope it doesn't come to this. There seems to be some butting heads over some of the labor issues with the monetization of it. And that's part of the game, obviously. But
it's a negotiation. Sure. It's a negotiation. I'm not sweating that. I'm encouraged by the fact that whatever was presented, that the other side didn't just say, okay, forget it, and walked away and said, we're not going to play. Look, I'm not speaking for the owners or the players, but common sense would tell you, I think, that there's too much at stake for the players and their careers and their salaries and all of that to not play. There's too much at stake for the owners and the monies that are going to be lost. These are their businesses. And the sour taste that you're alluding to that fans would have if the fight ends up being over money and not the common good, which is everyone's benefit and the game's benefit and safety, obviously. So, again, I think that any negotiation is sometimes ugly. It's sometimes nasty. But I'm encouraged by the fact we're not hearing a lot of leaks. We're not hearing a lot of people chirping in the background. Whatever is taking place behind closed doors. And I guess Rob Manfred the other day said on one of the networks that he's very, very encouraged that we're going to have a season. And I'll take Rob Manfred at his word. I hope he's right. And I hope we get that announcement yesterday, because I think it'd make everybody feel a whole lot better.
Last couple of questions for you here about your preparation. Are you diving into stats? Are you bouncing questions off some Braves about some opposing pitchers? Like, what kind of stuff does that guy have? How do you put your game prep together?
All of it. My prep is 3.5-4 hours every day for every game. My day usually starts, I'll get up, I'll grab a cup of coffee somewhere. I'll take my iPad, my scorebook from the last couple of games. If it's, a 4-game series, I'll look back and look for trends, look for things that I think are important and want to talk about. I'll go back and look at the opposing starter's last start, look at his box score, read the box score from that game, read those quotes in case there's anything that might jump out at me. Then I go through every game in the major leagues the night before and write down notes that might come in handy. And the reason I do that is 90% of that stuff I don't use. But if you have a 15-0 game, our job is to entertain people. And the way you can entertain them is to talk baseball, to talk about what else is happening instead of your club getting drubbed 15-0. If the Braves are up 15-0, obviously it's a totally different story. That gets me to about 11 o'clock in the morning. I go back, get my apartment cleaned up. Then I go get some exercise for a couple of hours, get some fresh air, come back, call home, see what's going on there, handle some business if need be, and then head to the ballpark around 3:30 for a 7:30 game. And then I go straight to the dugout, straight to the locker room, and go grab a couple of guys, go talk to the manager, talk to the trainers, see if everybody's okay, anybody's unavailable, go to the other dugout, talk to those guys, go talk to the other broadcasters, talk to the Braves and the Fox people if there's anything promotion-wise that we have to do. Then we have our production meeting for the game. Then we do our intro elements and teases and things of that, read promos, get a quick bite to eat. As I said, call home before the game. And then we're on the air at 6:30 for the pregame show and a 7:20 start. So we don't just show up looking pretty with our coats and ties and say ball two. There's a lot of preparation for the people behind the microphones, and even more so for the people behind the scenes, getting everything set up for us to hopefully not screw up the show. So I liken it to a cram session every day for a final exam, and the game is the test. You either pass it or you don't. And more often than not, I think Jeff Francoeur and Tom Glavine and Joe Simpson make it easy for me not to flunk.
Well, I was going to mention your broadcast partners, because it is teamwork up there. Of the guys you work with, this is just you and me talking. Who's a jerk?
They'll tell you it's me. No, none of them. And that's, again,
but you can tell they're great guys. They're great guys.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and that's really the secret, isn't it? When you have chemistry with people you really care about as friends first, that makes it so much easier to do your job. And ours is no different. I mean, there are plenty of broadcast booths in the major leagues where people, don't really get along very well, and they do the show business thing and they act it out, and on they go. We're very fortunate that that's not the case in the TV booth. Joe Simpson's like a second father to me, or an older brother. Love that man dearly. He's meant a lot to me and my family on a personal and professional basis. Jeff Francoeur, I guess I'm kind of like his Joe Simpson, kind of teaching him the ropes as he begins to make his way up. And he's going to be a fast learner. We don't have to worry about anything with Jeff. He's a star in the making, and he wants to be good. Tom Glavine is a lot like Pete Van Wieren. He's very analytical and professorial about how he approaches a game. And so the challenge for me as a broadcaster, as the play-by-play guy, is lead them to where they want to go. On television, the play-by-play guy is not the main guy. I say ball two. They tell me why, and they tell me what's going to happen, and they tell the audience what to expect. And the really, really good ones like Jeff, Joe, and Tom are able to do that, and it makes my job easy. I just tee them up, and they hit the ball 350 down the middle of the fairway. And there's an inherent trust, as I said. There's a great deal of friendship. We get on each other's case. We make fun of each other. We laugh at each other. We laugh with each other. And that, I think, comes across on the air. We're guests in everyone's home, and we're just a couple of guys coming over to drink beer and talk baseball and do it night after night. So I'm really, really blessed, not just with the guys I work with in the booth, but our terrific crew as well.
And a tremendous amount, obviously, of baseball knowledge among the, that.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, and that's the thing that I think has revolutionized our industry so much over the last 50, 60 years, and that is the wisdom of putting guys and gals who have played behind the microphone. I don't know what it's like to hear and face a 98-mile-an-hour sinking fastball. I don't know what it's like to rob a guy of a home run or steal second base or hit a home run. Those guys do. And those are the kinds of stories and things that people want to hear. And it never gets old hearing Tom Glavine break down what a pitcher is trying to do and what his pitching philosophies are and what he would like to see our guys do. And there's nothing more fun than hearing Jeff Francoeur poke fun at himself or talk about, you know, how a guy's approach in this situation would be as a hitter. And when those two start talking, which is what makes the best TV, it's very easy for me because they're having a conversation. I just try not to get into the way. And I think, again, it goes back to that simple word I mentioned. It's chemistry. They've got it. They were teammates, they're friends, and it's all our booth. And it's not my booth, it's our booth, and we really have a great family going, I think.
Well, while they're talking about pitch selection and things like that, you can always chime in with unique insight about the Bat Boys' perspective. Because
the Bat Boys' perspective, I talk mostly about where are we going after the game. That's kind of my job. And, you know, where's the 19th hole? But no, you know, they're great guys, and they are never ever look down their nose at me as a non-player. And I think that's important too, because even though I didn't play, I do have a pretty good idea of the game and how the game's supposed to be played.
Oh, sure.
And I have my own thoughts on that, and they're respectful of that. And if they disagree, that's okay. Reasonable people disagree about a lot of different things, but they know it comes from a place of just trying to promote the game and sell the broadcast and have a conversation, and they're really, really great at it.
And another interesting twist about the broadcast crew this year, you've added a new reporter from the dugout this year, but yet you haven't got a chance to really to work together yet, I guess, because hadn't she just showed up to spring training when everything got shut down?
Yeah, Kelly Kroll.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Chicago.
Yeah,
Kelly Kroll's her name. Terrific lady. Very, very polished. Has been doing Cubs baseball for a long time with NBC Sports Network. She knows the game. She's a pro's pro. She's going to be a great addition. She'd been down to spring training for our first two games, was introducing herself, and we were letting her meet all the people so they'd get used to the face and the name. Really, really hard worker. Really, really nice lady. And knows her stuff. She's worked in big markets, and she's aware of how to handle herself in a major league locker room. She's been there before and comes with very, very great, references and reviews. So very, very happy for Kelly. And like I said, she'll be a great addition when we get started. I know she's chomping at the bit, along with Paul Burr, who's going to be another reporter for us this year. So we've got a great stable of good people. And we're all just, like I said, ready to get back to work when the opening bell sounds. We'll be there.
And in the meantime, you guys are cranking out content on social media, doing interviews with, I've seen you talk to Chipper and whomever else, just to get some baseball conversation going online. So I guess that's helping you fill your days.
Yeah, it fills a little bit too. And look, we're team players. We want to help our network continue to keep people interested. And these are trying times. We're all trying to scratch our heads and figure out, okay, what's the best way to serve our fan base? And I think that's going to be the challenge, not just for us, but for every television entity covering our sport. If we're opening up with no fans, that's going to be tough for us because we get so much energy from the crowd. We react to what the crowd does and how they feel. It's those long silences where you hear the crowd roaring. That's not going to be there, at least not initially. So I think it's going to be a work in progress for everybody. And we're trying to think of the best ways to showcase our ballpark, our team, our fandom, without having fans in the stadium. And I think we're going to have a really good plan in place. We may do some spring training games down here in Florida to sort of get ideas of how that's going to work. But it's going to be a work in progress. And as I've said so many times, Roger, this is a season unlike any other. And if ever there was a time to try things that might not work, let's do it. Who cares? Let's just try. We may find a new way, a new paradigm to make the games more compelling and more interesting and more fan-friendly than ever before. And I think that's a challenge for all of us.
Yeah, definitely strange times, and hopefully,
no question.
Hopefully, we'll get sports back on the field soon, and baseball, and the crack of the bat, even if the stadium is empty, with Chip Carey's voice melodically talking about Ronald Acuna's home run.
I like the way that sounds, Roger, from your lips to God's ears.
So thanks, Chip, for your time. I do appreciate it. You've been listening to the Boss Podcast, and Chip, just so you know, the budget is so low, you're not going to get anything from me in any kind of remuneration except a hearty thank you. And
I will take any thank you is better than a you know what, so I'll take it.
And while I would love to be able to have like a house band or something really cool, but that would cost royalty. So I've got a royalty free fictional house band that I have called Herschel and the Heismans. Nice. In honor of Southern sports. So Herschel and the Heismans are going to play us out. Thanks again, Chip. I appreciate it. I'm Roger Maness. You've been listening to the Boss Podcast.
The Boss has been brought to you by Dirty Girl Mixers. Get your mix fix. And by RecTech Grills. Join the RecTech lifestyle. The Boss Podcast is a copyrighted presentation of Big Dog Productions Incorporated. You can find us online at bigdogproductions.tv. For more episodes of The Boss, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or log on to thebosspodcast.net.